Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, careers in training and development, and who makes the internet work? Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. Pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, and thanks for tuning in this morning. So who does make the internet work? What careers are there behind the scenes of the World Wide Web, and how do you train up for them? Cisco Networking Academy is like a university for internet specialists. Want to learn about what it takes to become a Cisco Certified Network Associate? We'll be joined by Denise Sangurlu, who's led the Cisco Networking Academy in Turkey. We'll be joined by Denise live from Istanbul in the second part of today's show to inform us and share part of her career story that includes a Canadian stint. But first, how do you get started in a career in training and development? We'll be joined by John Mudakis. He's Manager of Professional Development and Career Services at Ontario Society of Professional Engineers, or OSPE. John specializes in coordinating and implementing corporate training and change programs and startup projects. He'll share with us, what does it take to coordinate learning for members of a professional association, and how do you get into jobs in training and development? We'll also be joined by John's colleague, Carolyn Smith, who's OSPE's Manager of Corporate Communications and Digital Media. Carolyn is a strategic writer and communications manager with a background in journalism and public relations. Carolyn will help us learn about jobs in communications and how those jobs help increase the public's awareness of an organization and even of a whole profession. John Mudakis and Carolyn Smith join me live in studio. Welcome to Career Buzz, you guys.
Thank you, Mark. This is great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So, John, what are you liking about your career these days?
I'm really enjoying working with people and bringing projects and training programs to people. I really like finding what the problem is and then developing and delivering the solution. I think this is really a lot of fun. I love working with people. It's always been my space. So, you know, that's what I really love about this role.
And so what do you do? I mean, if listeners aren't really familiar with what a manager of professional development does, who are you talking to? What does a typical week look like?
Typically, we have two groups that we work with. We have our individual members. So we design and build a public schedule for our members. And so we work with them. We find out what their needs are. We get them enrolled in the courses. This is typically the engineers that we're talking about, the engineering community. Then, of course, the other group is the corporations. There's a lot of corporations who call us and say, hey, you know, OSPE, we would like to have a course on introductory project management. How can I get 20 of my people enrolled in the project management course? So there's a lot of coordinating. There's a lot of planning. There's a lot of meeting deadlines. There's a lot of, you know, working with the instructors, the facilitators. There's a lot of stakeholders that are involved in that piece.
So if you were to try and name a couple of skills or strengths that you have that you use regularly to be successful in your job, what would you say they are?
I think you have to be really very people-oriented. You need to have a great interpersonal skill. You need to be organized. I think there's this whole piece about being organized, being on time, sort of being on top of things, if you will. I think that's really important. It's easy for programs to fail if you're not on top of things. So that's quite important.
Right on. And Carolyn Smith, over to you. What do you like about your career?
Well, right now I'm responsible for getting the message of engineers and what they're doing in the province of Ontario out in the media, and so that the public has a good understanding of how important engineers are to society. So that's what is involved in my current role. I love writing. I love talking to media and organizing events so that engineers can get out there and really talk about the projects that they're involved in the province. So whether it's transit, infrastructure, things like that, I really like that. So, yeah.
And a communications professional, I think it's one of those hidden gem careers that people don't necessarily know about. So what do you do? What is a typical week? What are the kinds of things you said, writing, you know, you're trying to communicate messages to the public. So what kind of things do you actually do in a given week?
Well, OSPE has a quarterly magazine, so often I'm working on talking to engineers, talking to our members, talking to employers that we work with to really get their stories out. So it is a lot of writing. I'm preparing the magazine. I'm also getting calls from media who are looking for subject matter experts, engineers in a specific space that are involved in some of the biggest projects in the province, and they want to know about they want their technical expertise, and so it's coordinating those interviews with our members. So yes, it's a lot of writing, a lot of media relations, and also just working with the staff at OSPE, John, for example, to make sure that his programs are getting out there and people know about the courses and career services that OSPE offers. So a lot of communicating with the public as well.
All right, we'll find out in a bit how you get into those jobs, because I think people who have writing skills, who have good communication skills, it's one of those transferable skills that many people have. You study in university, what do you learn? Well, part of what you learn is communication. So I want to come back and find out a bit more about that. My guests this morning are Carolyn Smith and John Mudakis from Ontario Society of Professional Engineers, or OSPE. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.fm. So, John, let's go over to you. I saw, you know, your undergrad that was in urban planning and geography, and now you're doing something completely different. So just stepping back a bit and get your story here. When you were doing that degree, what were you thinking of back then? What do you think your career was going to be at that point?
So when I was doing my undergrad in urban studies and urban planning, I was really thinking that I'm probably not going to become an urban planner, believe it or not. But the part that I really loved was the whole planning piece. I just loved the whole, you know, seeing the bigger picture, working with people to develop solutions. And really, that's what urban planning is. It's a lot of, you know, working with people, working with sites, and working with, you know, projects and that kind of thing. And so when I started working in the real world, which was in the IT sector, I got involved in the whole training and development because there was a lot of opportunities there to bring solutions to our clients, you know, and it really entailed planning, planning solutions and bringing the solution to the people. So that's how I kind of got into learning and development. You know?
So it was the planning part of the urban planning that you're really drawing on.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
And so what happened right after you graduated? What kind of first job or jobs did you get?
Yeah, so I started working with an IT company. I was working here in Montreal. Well, here in Montreal. I'm originally
here
from
in
Montreal.
Canada.
Here in Canada.
In Montreal.
In Montreal, thanks. So I was working for an IT company there. And so I was working there for a couple of years. And then there was an opportunity for me to move to England. We were doing this huge sort of healthcare account there. They want the UK office there won a healthcare account there. So we ended up moving to England, and so I was living there for a couple of years and helped develop the whole learning and development piece there, and then I was there for a couple of years. When the project was over, I came back to Canada and moved to Toronto.
So I saw you've done a few kind of training coordinating roles. For a while there, you were working with Air Canada.
Yeah, I was working with Air Canada. We were implementing a huge sort of IT program there for their flight operations and that kind of stuff. So it was a really great program. I was there. I was doing that role for about 2 years, and it was quite a big project, if you will. We were running like 500 people through courses across 5 airports across Canada. It was good fun.
Wow. So now the job at OSPE, how did that come about?
That came about. I was doing some work for the Canadian Urban Transit Association. They call themselves CUTA. I was the training manager over there, implementing PD programs, you know, for their people. And so I joined OSPE about 3 years ago. I was called to help implement a couple of programs there. And so the rest is history, as they say.
If listeners are curious about jobs in training and development, I think some people like to educate, to teach, you know, but they don't necessarily want to teach kids. And then you think, well, what else is there? And of course, there's this whole world of corporate training.
Yes.
That I think is sort of misunderstood. People don't really know about that. So if listeners are kind of curious about that, I guess there's both jobs in the teaching part, the training and teaching, and then there's the coordinating roles. How would people get involved in this kind of career?
Oh, you just have to sort of network, and you need to talk to the right professionals. In the learning and development space, there's a lot of people who do teaching. There's instructional design. There's planning. There's coordinating. There's, you know, delivery. So I work with a lot of instructors. I don't actually do the delivery, so I'm more the back-end person that makes it happen. And so, yeah, you just have to network and speak to L&D professionals if you ever want to get involved with that space. Or, of course, they can send me an email.
LND.
LND.
Learning and development.
Learning and development. Yeah, yeah. LND, exactly. Yeah.
Watch out for those acronyms. All right, really interesting. And what about professional associations? Are there other professional associations, I mean, besides your engineering association, that are relevant to the training and development world?
The Canadian Society of Training and Development, I do a lot of work with these guys just in terms of, you know, networking and that kind of thing. That's an association or a society for LND, learning and development professionals, so there's another resource for people.
Right, and I know they have some kind of certification. I've spoken to some of them before as well.
Yep.
So if you're interested in it, you could go check them out, Canadian Society for Training and Development.
Exactly right.
Right on.
Exactly.
Great. Carolyn, over to you just to get your story. Let's step back a little bit and find out what happened. I know you studied journalism. What led you into journalism?
Well, I loved writing. I've always been a writer my entire life. So I got into Ryerson and was happy to take that program. I actually majored in broadcast journalism, so I ended up moving to Vancouver. I worked for CTV there for a little while and CKNW, the radio station out there as well. I loved it. Unfortunately, I graduated at a time where I was interning and not being paid to work, and I couldn't really afford to live off of a media internship anymore. So I decided I needed to do something different. So I ended up taking a PR course.
Public relations.
Yes, a public relations diploma at SFU, Simon Fraser University out west. And from there, I ended up working at a PR agency, and that's where I really saw that the skills you learn in journalism can be transferable into corporate communications. So basically, we started helping clients in a variety of different industries, real estate and et cetera, basically promote their projects and get in the media. So I found it quite easy because I understood the stories that media like and what they're looking for in a particular angle. So I really enjoyed that. I actually moved on from PR and started working for a mining company out west doing public affairs for them. So I loved that job. It was great. I got to travel. I was doing a lot of community relations, working with First Nations in Canada, making sure that projects were benefiting communities where those projects were. So I really enjoyed that. And then, you know, it was just time to move back home to Toronto. So I came back here, and OSPE is the second position that I've had since I've moved home, but really enjoying it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's interesting, the move from journalism to, well, communications, public relations. So if listeners are interested, a lot of people are interested in journalism. There's a certain glamour factor to it, and yet that field is changing so rapidly, and it can be challenging, as you said. I mean, what would you advise listeners? If they're interested in journalism right now, is it still smart? Is it still a good move? Take the journalism degree and then, like you can move away from it? Or what would you say about people starting off with that interest?
Well, I think a journalism degree is very transferable. Everyone that I graduated with, not all of them are working in news. There's a lot of people working in corporate communications. It can take you in several different places. I think having those core writing skills and really learning the things you do in journalism school are transferable to so many other careers. So, you know, if you like writing and you want to be a communications professional and you are lucky enough to get into a journalism program, I would definitely say go for it. You know, in this world, we often need another piece of paper after our undergrad, as everybody knows. So I think doing a PR program is a great next step as well if you do want to make the move into the communications space. But yes, I would say getting into that, companies really like to see that you have those skills and you have those writing skills starting out. So
that's a good kind of foot in the door for those kind of communications jobs if you have, say, the PR certificate like you had with the journalism background.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you can get into all kinds of interesting stuff. Now, you mentioned two things that listeners might not be familiar with, both public affairs and community relations. Mm-hmm. Can you just break that down? So what is public affairs?
Public affairs is a mix, I guess, of community relations, First Nations relations. It's PR, but it's public relations. So you're talking to the public about a company or a specific project. But it's a mixture. So you have different audiences. It can also include government relations. So, you know, when you're working for a mining company and you're in a particular jurisdiction where you're trying to get a project off the ground, you have to work with the local government to make sure they're on board with what you're doing. You have to talk to the community and make sure they understand what the project is, what jobs are going to be available, how it's going to impact their community. Often, you know, mining projects are in smaller cities. So, for example, we had a project in Alaska, another one in Eastern BC. So they're often small communities, and they don't really have a background of what this project is going to look like or how it's going to impact their community. So you really have to work with people on the ground. And then, of course, there's lots of First Nations relations. We want to make sure that, you know, when you're in a community like that, there's you're providing opportunities for everyone. So it's very interesting work. It's a lot of writing. Again, you know, you're preparing materials that really explain and break down the technical aspects of your project for the general public, but you're also making sure that people understand what opportunities are going to be available to them and how you want to help them as a company, you know, get the most out of a project that's happening in their area.
It sounds fascinating. And, you know, dealing with First Nations in Canada, there's a lot of mining companies, for instance, in Canada that have operations overseas. So you might even be in West Africa or, you know, I know one person who was on Career Buzz and she worked for a mining company and they had some operation in the Solomon Islands in the mm-hmm. South Pacific mm-hmm. and she routinely right. had to go and fly all over the world. So you might have an interest in international travel, is that part of the job as well?
Definitely. There's lots of travel involved. And, you know, you really have to have an open mind and go into a space and be the type of person who also has negotiating skills. And you have to have some amount of compassion. You know, you're going into somebody's hometown saying, we're going to build this big mine. And a lot of times people haven't been exposed to mining. They don't know how that's going to impact the environment and things like that. So you have to explain to them what mitigations you're going to have in place and how you're going to protect their community. So
fascinating role. My guests today are Carolyn Smith. She's OSPI's Manager of Corporate Communications and Digital Media, and John Mudakis. He's Manager of Professional Development and Career Services. I'm Mark Franklin, host of Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto, worldwide at CIUT.FM. So, guys, now you've both come together. You work at this society, Ontario Society of Professional Engineers. As you know, that's my first career. I've actually been doing some work with OSPI as well. So let's think about how the two of you come together to make both an organization, the public aware of it, right? We have engineers all over the province. And so how do those engineers learn about things like professional development? And then maybe the second question, bigger, is how does the public become aware of engineering as a profession? So let's start on the smaller one, John.
Sure, yeah.
People need to know you're offering all of this professional development. Yep. Maybe we should first distinguish what OSPI is and isn't, because there's this other organization called Professional Engineers Ontario. So can you just help us out? What is the distinction between those two organizations?
John's pointing at me. I think he wants me to take this one. So OSPI is the advocacy organization for engineers, whereas Professional Engineers Ontario is the regulator. So they deal with the licensing, engineering graduates who want to get their PEng license. They go through PEO, whereas we are a voluntary advocacy organization, and our role is to talk to government, media, and the public about the work of engineers and kind of promote the profession across the province. So, you know, we're a 15-year-old organization, and we came out of PEO. They decided they wanted to separate the advocacy organization from the regulator. So that's how OSPI was born 15 years ago. And yes, so we definitely have different mandates, although right. we do work together.
And yeah. and listeners might be familiar with medicine. There's an analog in medicine. You have the College of Physicians and Surgeons, and they license doctors into the field. And then you have things like the Ontario Medical Association, which is kind of the equivalent of OSPI, doing advocacy and professional development.
Exactly.
Right? So it's the same thing, and that's an important distinction. And many professions, I think, have that distinction, right?
Yes.
So John, you got, I think, what is it, 70,000 engineers in the province of Ontario, something like that.
Something crazy.
Myself
that,
being
yeah,
one of them.
That's great.
So how do they all learn about professional development? What do they want, and how do you respond to their needs?
Yeah, so there's a lot of talking to our engineers. There's a lot of what I call the needs assessment phase, where I'm talking to engineers and different stakeholders and corporations, finding out what they need, and then putting out what they're looking for. So Carol and I do a lot of work together in terms of I put out the training content, the training courses. We do a lot of classroom training. We do a lot of e-learning training, we do distance learning, we do blended learning. So we run a whole bunch of different programs, and then Carolyn helps here with the whole, you know, letting the world know that these courses are available. So she does a lot of digital media, social media. Our programs are all across, you know, Twitter and LinkedIn. We talk about it on LinkedIn. We get conversations going on LinkedIn, which is really, really helpful. And so that's how we let the people know that what we're offering.
So what are the trends? You know, every profession is going through its own kind of learning and development processes, and you know, doctors need to learn whatever the latest and greatest is. So what are engineers interested in these days, and especially the method of training? Is it classroom training? You mentioned online. What are the trends?
So that's a really good question. I think a lot of times people think, oh, you know, let's do e-learning because, you know, we can do e-learning modules from home, and, you know, we can sort of do it in the office and that kind of thing. But it seems to be that the engineers do like to socialize. They like to get together in a classroom. They like to learn together. They like to network, have discussions, share ideas, and that kind of thing. So the classroom training is still very popular in the engineering community. But on top of that, we have what we call the distance learning programs or blended learning programs, where we combine a bit of classroom, a bit of self-study, a bit of webinars. We do coaching conference calls with the instructor and that kind of thing. So it really brings together different types of delivery modes, you know. And so this is very, like, it's a bit sort of self-paced, if you will. So there's a lot of benefit. There's a lot of benefit in terms of the corporation not having to send someone to a course for 4 days, you know. So there's a bit of a cost benefit there. Yeah, so this is a lot of people are really liking that delivery mode.
And how's it working? Is it on the uptake? Are people learning?
Yeah.
Are they is business developing for the engineering professional development?
Yeah, so there's big uptake on this kind of delivery. A lot of our technical training is delivered that way, but a lot of our sort of our business skills, our basic sort of, you know, deliver, like, I'm thinking about. Gosh, I lost my train of thought. I'm talking about, like,
there's also the distinction between technical training, right? Learning a specific new technology or a new method.
Yes.
And then there's also, I don't know if we should call it soft skills. I hate that term because they actually are hard skills. But
right. Career
management, for instance, you know, and I know, and this is a career show, so I'm really interested in those. And I know there's some workshops about how job search and career management and getting your license.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of things that help people manage their career. So is that a kind of a normal distinction when you think about the list of courses available?
Yeah. I call those kind of like job ready skills. These are courses and sessions that we offer for people to get ready to meet employers. You know, we do a lot of like interview skills, we do a lot of resume skills, this kind of thing. And so we run them as short programs, short sort of sessions, if you will, online, sort of, again, distance learning. That seems to be very popular, and that seems to work with our, you know, with our community who are looking for, you know, for the engineers who are looking for work. So,
right on. And I know you and I have collaborated on this particular need that engineers have to get licensed. It's actually a complex process. You need four years of work experience, and then you need this thing called an experience record that you and I have talked about a lot, and how challenging that can be for engineers to kind of write up their engineering stories. And this can be a stopper for many engineers who can't write it up and then don't get their license, or at least are delayed in it. So what about that one?
That's an interesting course. So we developed that in 2014. We launched it in January 2014. The uptake and the interest was a little bit slow at the beginning because people were like, this is kind of cool. Like, how does this course work? You know, so we had to do a lot of like promotion, a lot of talking about this course to our community. And now here we are a year later, and it's a very popular course. We run it across Ontario. We run it every 2 months. You know, we're going to be doing a session in Ottawa at the end of the month. So it's quite popular. And I think this is a really value-add course for the engineers in training, the EITs.
If anybody is listening and they're actually curious about looking at the list of courses, what's the site they should have a peek at while they're listening?
Yeah, they can go to ospe.on.ca and have a look there under events. Under events, you'll find the calendar, and it's all there.
Right on. I'm talking to John Mudakis and Carolyn Smith from OSPE, or the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers. Here on Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide at CIUT.FM. We have probably 5 or 6 minutes left in the interview right now, and if listeners have questions either about professional development or communications and jobs and communications, you can give us a call. Sean is standing by, and you can come on the air with a comment or a question. The number to call is 416-946-7000. 416-946-7000 if you have a question about professional development or communications. So Carolyn Smith, over to you now. We've talked to John about getting the word out about training and development to the engineering community. Now there's the whole province who needs to understand what the heck do engineers do? Why should the public care? Now, how do you, you know, everybody knows doctors and medicine. I think that's an easy one. Engineering is sort of under the radar screen for a lot of people. How do you get the word out?
Well, lately we're trying to piggyback on things that are in the news. So, for example, in the past few months, it was all about the Gardiner Expressway and what the different options available before City Council voted on which option to go forward with. They ended up choosing the hybrid. We had an event, OSPE did, in partnership with Professional Engineers Ontario, and we got all the engineers together to have a discussion about which option was the best from an engineering perspective. And we had the deputy mayor there and a lot of other stakeholders, and they just listened to what engineers had to say and what option is the most viable based on engineering principles, you know, looking forward to the future and the infrastructure of the downtown core. So that was a very interesting event, and we got a lot of press out of it and a lot of exposure just to remind people that, you know, engineers need to be involved in these discussions. And when we're talking about infrastructure or transit planning, particularly for Southern Ontario, but really the entire province, engineers need to be involved in that process because they have the expertise, and especially government really needs to consult them and have them at the table when they're having these discussions that are going to impact us for years and years to come.
So it sounds like, you know, these technical decisions, especially the Gardiner. I mean, I was listening to that with great interest. I think many Torontonians were. And it's council voting on things. Now, council is, I don't know if we have any professional engineers on Toronto Council now. So, of course, it makes sense that they should be involved. You don't really hear that they were involved. What was the consensus among the engineering community about the decision for the Gardiner?
Well, actually, there wasn't one. So that's what that's what we ended up finding out at the event. Much like the rest of Toronto, everybody has their own opinions. You know, one of the options that was presented by an engineer that night was it wasn't one that council was considering because it's so expensive, but it was very futuristic and very forward-looking. So it's, you know, engineers aren't always on the same page, much like the rest of the population, but it was good to have that discussion, have politicians in the room, just taking note of the different perspective and the technical expertise that engineers do have. So unfortunately, I can't tell you that engineers agreed on one or the other, but, you know, the hybrid option is what we're looking at now. So It's basically OSPE will continue to consult government and, you know, give them recommendations based on the decisions that they make moving forward, whether it's for the Gardiner or for the TTC relief line, or the Young relief line. So that's kind of what our position is. We can't always come up with a perfect answer for government that's saying engineers say go forward with this, but we can provide recommendations based on their decisions.
So, you know, in addition to the specific issue of the Gardiner, it sounds like one way to get the public to know about something like a whole profession is to find out what's newsy, what's newsworthy these days, and try and hook it into that as opposed to trying to create a message and get it out there without it connecting to the news.
Definitely. I mean, women in engineering is a big topic lately. I don't know if you saw the hashtag that kind of went viral. It was, I look like an engineer, the young female engineer. She was used in an ad for a California company, and people said, oh, she's too pretty. She doesn't look like an engineer. So it started this whole social media campaign, and actually Global News came to talk to OSPE about that and talk about why our members are reacting to this so much. And it's really because you know, people's old concept of who an engineer is, you know, a male, an older person, whatever it is, it's really not accurate anymore. So that's another thing we're trying to do, is dispel some of those myths that have been around for years. So.
Right on. Mm-hmm. I saw that I look like an engineer hashtag, and we communicated through social media on that. It was fascinating. If listeners want to check it out, go look at that hashtag, I look like an engineer, and check out what's been going on just that very interesting issue. So we just have a couple of minutes, you guys, for this part of the interview. I want you to stick around when we interview Denise Sangurlu from Cisco, because there's a kind of overlap there. So we'll come back to you in the second part of the show. But just to bring it back to the personal, you both shared with us your career stories, or at least a little bit of the what brought you here, the twists and turns. And if I ask you to just reflect on your own personal career stories and what you've learned about making good choices or bad choices from your own personal story. If you could share one thing with the listener about what you've learned from that experience, John?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question, eh? I have no regrets. I think the learning and development space is really, it's been really rewarding. It's been fun. It's been fantastic. I had opportunities to travel, across North America into Europe because of my career. So it's a great career to be in, and it's a lot of fun.
Right on. Well, you're saying that with a smile on your face, so that's important. Listeners might not, they can hear that, but they can't see it. And Carolyn, from you, one thing you might share with listeners about what you've learned?
I would say don't rule anything out. A lot of the jobs that I've had, I didn't expect to work in mining. I didn't expect to work for an engineering association. But, as you go through different experiences and different positions, you realize what you're good at and what you really enjoy. So I would say never turn down an opportunity, or never think, oh, I don't know if I can do this. This is too challenging. Just go with it. And, you'll learn something about yourself. Maybe it's not the position for you, but, you always learn. So
great advice. Thanks so much, both of you, Carolyn Smith, John Moudakis, for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We're going to take a quick musical break. We've got Alanis Morissette with Ironic. Stick around. We're going to be speaking to Denise Sangurlu from Cisco Learning Academy right after this break.
An old man turned 98. You won the lottery. It's a black fly in your Chardonnay. It's a death row pardon, 2 minutes too late. And isn't it ironic, don't you think? It's like rain.
Yeah. And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on to our next interview, I want to let listeners know there's an inspiring podcast of Career Buzz episodes. If you want to hear some really interesting career stories and twists and turns in people's careers, check out the Career Buzz button on the right side of careercycles.com. The August 19th show, we talked about bridging programs for internationally educated professionals with Amina Zafar. On August 12th, we talked to career crafting author Kathy Campbell. We also had Olympic gold medalist Misty Hyman. She shared her inspirational career story and what she's done after the Olympics. That's the August 12th show. Click the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com or go straight to careercycles.com/radio. One more message. Listeners should also know about the Your Workplace Conference. Very relevant, talking about workplaces. If anybody is in human resources or any kind of professional development, Your Workplace team, there's a magazine called Your Workplace. They put on an annual conference. I've been the radio correspondent at the Your Workplace Conference for the last 2 years. I've brought interviews from speakers and delegates, and I'll be doing so again. The conference is coming up September 23-24 in Toronto. Go to yourworkplace.ca/conference. And Vera Asenin and her team at Your Workplace have made available a sign-up code for Career Buzz listeners. When you sign in or want to join that conference, you can get a preferred rate by typing in the code CC100, CC100, yourworkplace.ca/conference. Thanks, Vera and your team. So who makes the internet work? What careers are there behind the scenes of the World Wide Web, and how do you train up for them? Cisco Networking Academy is like a university for internet specialists. Want to learn about what it takes to become a Cisco Certified Network Associate or a Cisco Certified Design Associate? Denise Sangourlou has worked at Cisco since 2001, where she has managed Cisco Learning Academy in Turkey, though currently she's the Corporate Social Responsibility Manager for Turkey. Denise did an undergrad in engineering in Turkey, and then a Master of Engineering here at the University of Toronto. She started her career in Toronto as a software consultant at Numetrics, where I met her, before moving back to her home country, eventually moving to the training and education world at SAP and Cisco. Denise Sangourlou joins us live by phone from Istanbul, Turkey. Welcome to Career Buzz, Denise.
Hello. Hello, Mark. Hello, Canada. Hello, John and Carolyn. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. Denise, so what do you like about your career these days?
Well, as you so nicely put it, it's a world of change in the world of IT. The internet, well, we all know how it changes the way we learn, the way we have fun, the way we communicate. And the background is as fascinating as the foreground, that's for sure. What I love is that this is a global environment to work in. It's international, it's intercultural. I'm part of a team that has members from all over the world, and I love that. And ultimately, since we deal with education in such an exciting field, we do impact lives. We do change lives for the better, I think, because as you learn about these things, you have better opportunities in life in terms of your career. So those are some of the things that I love about my career.
Now, we'll talk to you more about the Cisco Networking Academy in a bit, but I know you've now changed jobs. So as a corporate social responsibility manager at Cisco, what do you do?
Well, interestingly enough, since the Networking Academy is our largest program in corporate social responsibility, I spend a large part of my time actually busy with the program itself. So it is the same job since many years, and the content is around educational programs and some other corporate social responsibility programs as well. But most of our work is revolves around the Networking Academy program. So I basically work with educational institutions to make sure that they understand the value of the program, they position it correctly, they attract the correct students, they're prepared in terms of their instructors and lab environment, and they're offering this training. And we also partner with them to help the graduates find jobs.
Well, so there's a real career component to it. I have the OSPE folks here still in studio. I know John is nodding his head that it's not just about the learning; it's the what happens after the learning and the career opportunity. So I want to come back to that in a minute. But for you personally, you've had quite a career in learning and development. What would you say the top few skills or strengths are that you use or you draw on regularly to be successful?
What I find is that as I started my professional life as an engineer like you, I was very much involved in the technical side of things, the software, the challenges in modeling the software and all that. And then I realized it's really mostly about people going through massive change, using different tools, changing the way they look at the job that they've been doing for a long time because of the new opportunities that technology brings in. Sometimes it can be overwhelming. So I found that I focused more and more on the people side of things, on the change that the organizations and the people in them are going through. And so I moved on to consulting and training, software training, and then change management. And then I ended up in training itself. For many years, I managed the training center, SAP's training center. And then when I learned about the Network New Academy program, which is a training program for students as well as for adults who want to do retraining, I said, well, that's where the core of the problem is. So I decided to focus there. And I'm quite happy about that decision.
So it's interesting to hear, from the technical background, realizing that it's, I like the way you phrased it, people going through massive change. Kind of mm-hmm. describes what all of us are going through because of the pace of change, especially in technology. Mm-hmm. My guest this morning is Denise Sangurlu. She's actually speaking to us from Istanbul, Turkey. She works at Cisco and oversees the Cisco Networking Academy. Here on Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.fm. So, Denise, let's just figure out how you got here. Your undergraduate studies were in industrial engineering, as were mine. What led you there in the first place? Why did you get into engineering in the first place?
I think it wasn't a very conscious decision. I mean, I was good at math, science. My parents are both engineers, so I thought I'll just go ahead and do some engineering. I know it's a very valuable skill in terms of employability. I can get a good job. And then this was the most exciting type of engineering at the time, which was about, 30 years ago when I made that decision. So I was happy with the engineering education as it is. I realized that this was about industry, believe it or not, after I graduated. And I realized, I have to visit all these factories and workplaces and job shops and deal with the people there. That part was really, really interesting because that meant that I had to be able to communicate with workers as well as white-collar people, as well as managers, as well as executives at times. That in itself was exciting. But choosing engineering as a branch, I think I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I figured it out as I went along.
I think that's the case with so many people. We make our big decisions earlier. We have an inkling as to what's going on, but not a full picture of it. And, like we heard from Carolyn earlier, there are opportunities that come up and you kind of keep on doing a little error correction as you move through life, figuring out what you like and what you don't like. Now something brought you to Canada where you and I met, but you came to Canada to do a Master of Engineering. What brought you to Canada?
Well, I wanted to study abroad, and the University of Toronto looked really interesting, exciting. I thought Toronto would be a great place to live for a while, and I certainly was right. I spent 3 years in Toronto, and I really, really enjoyed being there, met wonderful people. Imagine, you are my first boss ever, so wonderful collection of people. It was a great experience for me. I also liked the quality of the education there. I studied operations research as well as information technologies, great lab, very good quality of education. And that really helped me a lot later in my career. The fact that I did study abroad as well as the quality of the education that I had the privilege of taking.
It's interesting you're saying that. As you know, I was in Turkey earlier this summer and met a few people and actually interviewed them. And there was one kind of young, early career woman in the kind of the hospitality industry. I think she had done a public relations undergrad. And she said almost what you just said. In Turkey, it is really valuable to have international experience on your resume. You're somehow taken more seriously back in Turkey when you have that international experience. Her idea was she wanted to go to the U.S. and work there. But is that the case? What is it about Turkish employers that they want to see international experience on people's resumes?
Well, for sure, in the field of engineering and especially information technology, since Turkey, like in many parts of the world, is not an actual manufacturer of this technology or an R&D-oriented country, we tend to import most of the technology. Then it becomes very important to have a team of people who understand the language, the business practices of the countries that actually produce this technology, to be able to adopt it, to train people within the country. You need an interface. And I find that once you have a degree from, let's say, the U.S. or Canada, you can then work for multinational companies and really be useful.
Which I know was part of you, which was part of your story. But first, how did you get that first job? You know, if listeners are, let's say we have some listeners who are studying now or are recent grads and trying to figure out what to do next. You know, it's September, and everybody probably who graduated in the spring is maybe took the summer off, and they're like stressed out. Now it's September. I need a job. How did you get that first job?
It's interesting. You know, I never really looked for a job. I was working away on my master's thesis, which was around scheduling, job shop scheduling, production planning. And there were seminars in the university at the time for graduate students and our teachers. So I was attending the seminar about this company who produces a software solution for scheduling. So I just went up to the presenter and I said, by the way, I'm doing my master's on this topic. So we got into this conversation. And then I ended up with a job offer for that 1 year that I had in Canada. So that's how it all, I had hardly had time to actually complete my master's thesis. I just started working right away.
That's a great story, Denise, and I think listeners can learn a lot from it. It's not the standard. I sat in front of my computer all day and looked at job postings and fired off resumes randomly. It's more, I took some proactive steps. I took some inspired action. I went out to a seminar of some interest, and I went and spoke to the presenter, and that's what led to the offer. So thanks for sharing that story. And then you and I actually worked together back at a company that was called Numetrics at the time, and so fascinating to spend time going into all these factories, detergent factories, and how you make chocolate, and how you make beer, and bottling pop and beer. And I mean, I probably went into 100, 150 factories and implemented these systems. What did you like about that first job?
I just, it was like solving a series of amazing puzzles one after another, right? Because you have a beer factory, how do you plan the production there? And then a completely different story is a chocolate factory, and then somebody manufactures toilet paper. So it was, for me, it was these wonderful puzzles to solve. And then I had, believe it or not, 7 more years of it when I came back to Turkey for enterprise resource planning solutions like QAD, SAP. I did more of that in several different industries. That was fascinating. You learn so much, and you meet so many different people and organizations. That was fascinating for me.
My guest this morning is Denise Sengurlu. She's talking to us from Istanbul, Turkey. She works for Cisco and has been involved with the Cisco Networking Academy. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.fm. Denise, like many people, you traveled, you lived in Turkey, you came to Canada, and you came back. And sometimes people experience this weird thing called reverse culture shock, where you're going back to a country, of course, that you're super familiar with, but you've now become familiar with another place, in this case, Canada. How was that experience for you coming back to live and work in Turkey?
I did have the reverse culture shock, now that you say it. I do recognize that very strongly, because I was not the same person who left the country 3 years ago. I had learned so much, and my outlook to life had changed, and I really noticed it when I came back. So I went back to my hometown, back to my parents, and I said, I have changed too much. I just cannot go on like this. So I moved to Istanbul and set up a new life for myself. I just couldn't fit back in anymore. And it took me a while, especially in business life. It's different. Cultures are different. In Toronto, in Canada, I found that when we had a business meeting, it was very much to the point and business-oriented, whereas here in Turkey, you tend to spend more time socializing and maybe a bit less focus, more time on building confidence and a relationship. And then things are easier. You do need to give that time. So things like that that I had to learn when I had to come and when I did come back to Turkey.
That's so interesting, you know, and my guests from OSPI here are both nodding. I think you're speaking to something. In Toronto, it's so interesting because we have people from all over the world, and we're dealing with all kinds of different cultures, and different people come at things, come at a business meeting from a different perspective. And I think you're really speaking to something that's so important, and we have to remember that in hugely multicultural places like Toronto, that people might come at a meeting with a very different kind of expectation. Right? John, you're nodding your head. Do you have any comment on that specific point?
Oh, I think, Denise, you're totally right about, you know, how different cultures conduct business meetings, you know, how they close deals, if you will, how they write proposals, that kind of thing. I mean, I think a lot of the, you know, Turkey is very sort of European in that way. And so, you know, there's a lot of socializing. There's a lot of, you know, going out and having a coffee and discussing business, you know, whereas here in Canada, it's a little bit more, like you said, to the point. You know, so I totally agree with you on that one.
And maybe even more so in the U.S., you know.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Totally, totally right.
So yeah. So that's a really fascinating part of the story. So what happened, Denise, next? I know you worked in enterprise requirements planning. You were doing a couple of really interesting jobs before you got into this whole world of learning and education and training and development. So what happened? How did that transition occur for you?
Well, I came back to Turkey and I got a call from a large multinational saying, we were looking for someone who knows about this particular software that Numetrics had, right? So again, I did not look for a job. I ended up in my next job where I was the software consultant for this particular, in the ERP world and scheduling, and, you know, they wanted to integrate with the software. So I did end up in the enterprise resource planning consultancy, IT companies, and teaching there. One thing led to another. I went to another company called Digital. But all in all, it was 7 or 8 years of visiting different industries and building models for them and leading people through this change. And I noticed more and more that this is about people who are in working life retraining themselves to understand this new technology and to understand business integration and the challenges and opportunities that come with it. So then I was offered a job by SAP to manage their training center, which does just that. I did that for a couple of years. Lots of people who are already employed taking these courses to use the software in their company, but a lot of newcomers into business life as well were there. And then I realized that Cisco does a program called Networking Academy within the world of corporate social responsibility. It's not a for-profit thing. And the focus there is, since there is a high demand of IT specialists, the existing educational institutions may or may not be able to train that many people. How can we help them? How can we provide content and some standardization, some certification, and build the workforce of the future in IT? I liked that idea, and I ended up working for Cisco, and it's been more than, 13 years? I'm still enjoying it.
Well, that's a testament to some kind of good work environment if you still like it after 13 years. Listeners might be very interested in these certifications. You know, I was doing a little research before today's interview, and I really checked out Cisco Networking Academy, and there's so many certifications and levels. You know, you've got it all kind of in a big matrix. You know, there's entry and advanced and so many different things. What is hot these days? What's really important or hot if listeners are kind of curious, if they go to the website of Cisco Networking Academy and they see all these things, what are some of the things that are really interesting and hot these days?
Well, networking in itself actually is quite a structured profession, I can say. There is a set of certifications, like you mentioned, Cisco Certified Networking Associate, Networking Professional, Internet Networking Expert, and a whole kind of variety of other certifications that are very valid within the networking world. Now, how you get prepared for these certifications, and there are really serious exams that you have to take, how you get prepared, you can have a different number of paths. You can do it yourself, or you can take a course from an actual training company at a cost. Another alternative is you can use the Networking Academy program. And this is a program that Cisco builds the content and all the learning tools for, and reaches out to either universities or NGOs or colleges, high schools that already teach technology and networking, to support them with the content and the tools and the assessment system, and to bring in some standardization. And we do that all over the world in 165 countries, with maybe 9,000 plus institutions that we call academies. In Canada, for instance, you have 260 such academies with 500 instructors and 25,000 students, believe it or not.
Wow,
so
that's
quite large.
That's huge.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
You know, just thinking about OSPI, I mean, those, when you hear those numbers, guys, I mean, Cisco is such a huge company. How does that hit you as a huge number?
It hits me as a huge number, and I also realized that when I used to work at Fujitsu was another big IT company. These are big conglomerates. There's a lot of interesting projects that you work on, and there's a lot of interesting training programs that are required out there. So, yeah, I mean, big numbers, eh? But really a lot of fun to work in.
And Denise, do you have to be a technical expert? Do you have to have a background in engineering or engineering technology to pursue these career paths? Or could a listener who's just pretty interested in technology without a technical educational background, can they get involved?
The actual purpose of the Networking Academy program is to take someone who does not know about technology and enable this person to be a professional in technology. So everybody's invited, and it's actually used very widely worldwide for retraining of people like you and me who want to add a skill or maybe change jobs, enter the field of technology. And when you look at the actual content of the program, the options that it offers to you, you can be a networking expert, or you can take a more basic level of training as an IT expert, information technology expert. That is a generalist. That's also another option. You can take trainings on Internet of Everything, Internet of Things, or cybersecurity, a whole track on security. You can also take courses on entrepreneurship, how to be your own boss. So there's a whole variety of courses that are available through the Academy partners. And you can start from where you want. You can either take a very technical track, or you can use these other courses to develop yourself further.
Right on. We just have a couple of minutes left, Denise. I'm just curious about one thing about the job market right afterwards, and how the Learning Academy might help people get those jobs. Is that integrated right into the process?
We do have some local services in some countries that help the students, and we have certain websites that our Cisco partners and our customers use when they're looking for an expert on networking. So we have something called NetAcad Advantage, for example, where students can post their CVs and employers post their requirements when they're looking for someone. That's an area that we really focus on, and we want to help people through their job search. Another thing that we do is once the student completes the Networking Academy, we and the Academy together offer a graduate certification.
Wow, it's like a whole university there. It's amazing.
Exactly.
If people want to check this out, I know we just have a moment left. If they want to check out the Learning Network, how do they do that on the internet?
They can just search for Cisco Academy, or they go to netacad.com. And we have a special page for Canada as well. They can use the Academy Locator to find an Academy near them. There are several all over the country. Just to give you an example, in Toronto, there's a company called NPower that they can just contact and see what they have to offer. The Canadian Army, we recently have an agreement with them, so you will see more of that. There are lots of opportunities across the country to contact academies and then reach these courses.
That's great, great info. And Denise, finally, back to the personal story. And one thing that you can share with listeners from your very interesting career story, what you've learned, what's one thing you can share with listeners?
I would say, as a person, you keep changing through time. And it's very important